Radio Prague News.
The Temelín nuclear power plant has reported an error in servicing that did not affect safety. Prime Minister Babiš has told Bild the EU needs unity in foreign policy and trade, and the government is planning a series of measures to fight the poverty business. The management of the Temelín nuclear power plant on Monday reported a human error in servicing when lightly radioactive water was released into the wrong reservoir. The water remained in a closed circuit and the incident did not endanger safety or affect power production, Temelín said in a statement. A report was sent to the State Institute for Nuclear Safety and in line with a bilateral agreement to the Austrian authorities in Melk. The European Union needs unity in its foreign and trade policy, Czech Prime Minister Andrej Babiš told the German Daily Bild. The Czech Prime Minister said the trade dispute with US President Donald Trump showed how badly Europe needed to stand together and act in unity. He said Brexit was bad in every way for Europe and Brussels must prevent further departures from the bloc. As regards the Czech Republic, Babiš said the country's departure from the EU would be a disaster. On the domestic front, the Czech Prime Minister rejected the idea that the communists who supported the minority government of ANO and the Social Democrats had acquired significant influence on national decision-making. The government is planning a series of measures to fight the poverty business. Labour and Social Affairs Minister Jana Maláčová said her own ministry was cooperating with the ministries of the Interior, Health and Local Development on a series of measures which would prevent money-making activities that attract a large portion of their business from the poor. These include rental price maps, hygiene norms in properties for rent and a limit on the number of persons per square metre. The measures are currently being consulted with town mayors. According to Prime Minister Andrej Babiš, the government will not try to push through a law on social housing, but will provide housing subsidies for selected localities. Prime Minister Andrej Babiš's wife Monika has resigned from the board of Imoba, the company that owns the Stork's Nest Farm and Conference Centre, over which her husband faces charges of EU subsidy fraud, the Daily E15 reported on Monday. Monika Babišová left the board at her own request without giving any reasons. Prime Minister Babiš is suspected of having manipulated the status of the Stork's Nest Farm in order to gain a 50 million crown EU subsidy for the company, which would otherwise have been out of reach. Although Babiš has denied any wrongdoing, Imoba recently returned the subsidy in full. Noise pollution in the vicinity of Prague's Václav Havel Airport has worsened and the airport management has started fining companies that use louder planes than agreed on or shift their flights into the night hours. According to the airport spokesman Roman Pacvoň, the airport started issuing noise pollution fines in June of this year and has so far issued fines of over 3 million crowns. The set noise pollution limits have not been violated to date, but aircraft noise has been getting worse in the night hours, which could soon present a problem, Pacvoň said. In the first 6 months of 2018, the airport registered over 70,000 arrivals and departures, which is a 5.4% increase year on year. And finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. Tuesday should bring clear to partly cloudy skies and day temperatures between 22 and 26 degrees Celsius. I'm Daniela Lazarová, and that's the end of the news.
Hello, this is Radio Prague with me, Ian Willoughby. Today, the Health Minister and unions at odds over the issue of pay rises. Czech engineers test special sensors aimed at preventing bridges from collapsing. And we meet Thomas Archer Batta, the only member of the Batia family currently working for the famous shoemakers. The Czech Republic's health sector trade unions are set to hold talks with the health minister this week. They've rejected his offer of a 5% pay rise and insist on a blanket salary increase of 10%. If their demands aren't met, they're ready to call on doctors and nurses to stop doing overtime. Ruth Frankova has more.
Czech Health Minister Adam Vojtěch announced on Sunday that there would be no blanket wage hike for doctors and nurses this year. The statement has elicited a sharp response from the country's health unions, which have been pushing for a 10% rise for all workers in the health sector. In July, the unions called a strike alert in support of higher wages and wrote an open letter to Prime Minister Andrej Babiš, urging him to keep promises made by the coalition government in 2016. But Mr. Vojtěch says wages in the health sector have already risen by 30% in the last 5 years. Speaking in a debate program on Czech television on Sunday, he said the government would only raise salaries of specific workers, such as young doctors who are at the beginning of their careers.
The biggest problem we are facing today is the lack of nurses in acute inpatient care. We want to pump 4.7 billion crowns into the sector to support staff doing shifts. It will be quite a significant salary hike, and it is definitely something that makes sense. We cannot solve problems by a blanket pay rise. We have to target specific areas. This is my firm conviction.
In reaction to the statement, the head of the Czech Doctors' Union, Martin Engel, said that the 10% salary hike was the only option they were ready to debate. He also said money was not the only problem, pointing out that the Czech health sector was currently lacking some 3,000 doctors. Dagmar Žitníková, the head of Umbrella Organization of Health and Social Services Employees, told Czech television that she was convinced that there was enough money in the healthcare sector to allow for the 10% raise in wages.
Our long-term agreement was a raise of 10% for 3 consecutive years, but unfortunately we haven't signed any deal this year. We have held talks with the minister in the past and we plan to meet with him again. I'm convinced there is still space for negotiation.
Mrs. Žitníková says if their demands are not met, the unions will call on doctors and nurses to abide by the labour code with respect to overtime and urge them to highlight the breaking of regulations. Many hospitals in the Czech Republic admit that due to a shortage of staff, they are forcing doctors and nurses to take more overtime hours than the labour code abides.
Thank you for that report, Ruth Frankova. Scientists from the Czech Technical University in Prague are testing sensors built into bridges that should be able to continually monitor the strain and tension within the construction. If successful, the system could help prevent bridge overloads and other technical problems. Tom McEncrow reports.
The tragic collapse of Genoa's Mirandi Highway Bridge in August 2018 raised public awareness across Europe of the many key tunnels and crossings reaching the end of their life. The case is no different in the Czech Republic. According to data from the Czech Transport Ministry's Road and Motorway Directorate, the country's primary road network currently contains 6 bridges, which are classified as being in a severely dilapidated state, while the second-tier road system contains over 80 such structures. To prevent unexpected collapses from taking place, a special team of scientists at the Czech Technical University's Centre for Energy Efficient Buildings, or UCEEB, is working on a bridge monitoring system that uses fibre optics to measure tension. Dr. Jan Včelák, who leads the project, explains how this system works.
We put optic fibre sensors, which you can imagine that it's a string of fibre optic, and during the construction process, we put this string into the structure. Then it's covered by concrete. From these structures, the light is reflected back to the end of the fiber optic, where we have an optic analyzer. And the tension or the strain corresponds to the frequency of the light, which is reflected back.
The system, which is currently being tested on a bridge under construction in southern Bohemia, can be used in Finnish bridges as well. However, whether it ends up being used is also a question of cost. A study presented by Czech scientists in April 2018 estimated that the total cost of bridge repair in the country would be as high as 27 billion crowns. Včelák believes there are 2 options on how to use the system.
The system of the optic fibers is not very expensive. We are talking about 10,000 crowns for the sensors or maybe 20,000 crowns for the sensors. But what is much more expensive is the unit which evaluates the signal which is reflected from the fiber brick structure. The other possibility is that we don't leave the unit on the bridge, but we do a regular check of the structure from time to time. But if you want to have an immediate warning, you would need to have the unit connected permanently.
Personally, Fchilak believes that the system is more likely to be implemented in new bridges because the price can be covered by the contract. Introducing the fibre optic cable system into bridges under construction is also safer from a practical perspective, as it can be covered in concrete and therefore protected from outside factors such as weather or theft. On old bridges, the cables would be more vulnerable. For now, the team's cable warning system is still dependent on successfully passing its trial phase, which Fchilak believes is vital for the project to be trusted and ultimately picked up by mainstream companies.
Thank you for that, Tom McEncrow. And now it's time for a roundup of the latest Czech sports news. We begin today with soccer and the news that the Czech national team manager Karel Jarolím is under considerable pressure, with speculation mounting that the 62-year-old may soon get the elbow. The Czech FA were critical of the coach when he failed to get the country to the World Cup in Russia, and now Jarolím has a lot of work to do if his charges are to achieve anything in the new Nations League. The Czechs took the lead after only 4 minutes in their first game in the competition at home against Ukraine on Thursday. However, they conceded at the close of the first half and then, thanks to a mix-up at the back, on the 90th minute to eventually lose 2-1. After the match, Karel Jarolím said he wished to continue in the job and struck a philosophical note.
Naturally,
it's not pleasant, but it would be sad if one wasn't up to the job. This is the coaching trade, and you have to count on all possibilities. Football brings victories and defeats.
Karel Jarolím and the Czechs face the third team in their Nations League group, neighbour Slovakia, away on the 13th of October, before another clash with Ukraine 3 days later. Way before that, they face Russia in a friendly in Rostov on Don on Monday night. That's after the recording of our show. Karel Jarolím has promised to ring the changes for that clash. Athletics now, and Czech javelin throwers Jakub Vadlich and Nikola Ogrodnikova represented Europe at the IAAF Continental Cup in Ostrava at the weekend. Vadlich placed fifth and Ogrodnikova finished seventh, but the pair came second overall with the European team behind winners the USA. The phenomenal Czech climber Adam Ondra has failed to make it a hat-trick of gold medals at the Climbing World Championships. Ondra finished second to Austria's Jakub Schubert in Innsbruck to take silver this time out. Another Czech, Jakub Konečný, came sixth in Sunday's final. The sport will be included in the Olympic Games for the first time in Tokyo in 2020. Finally, tennis, and the Czech pair Kateřina Siniaková and Barbara Krejčíková also missed out on a glorious hat-trick. After the French Open and Wimbledon, the pair were hoping for further success at the last Grand Slam tournament of the year, the US Open. However, they were unable to get by Ashley Barty and Coco Vandeweghe at the semi-final stage at Flushing Meadows. And that's all the sports news for now. Now, in the final part of our programme today, my guest in one-on-one is Thomas Archer Bata. He's the great-grandson of the great Czech industrialist Tomáš Batia. Thomas Archer Bata is in charge of global marketing for the Bata Shoe Company, which has more than 5,000 stores in over 70 countries all around the globe. He's the only member of the Bata family working at the famous firm, which his great-grandfather, Tomáš Batia, founded in the Moravian town of Zlín at the end of the 19th century. Thomas Archer Bata was born in Canada and has lived in Switzerland, the UK and South America. So I asked him, when did he first visit the Czech Republic?
Our first family trip to Czech Republic was in 1992. You know, and most of my family had never been
to the Czech Republic. My dad hadn't been here since he was basically an infant because, communism and things like that, we couldn't come, basically. And our first few trips were all to Moravia. I'd been to the Czech Republic at least 15 times before I went to Prague. Because we used to fly to Vienna, and then we used to drive, to Zlín, into a little town called Ločka, which is near Zlín, where our family originally come from. And we'd go, go to the countryside, see my granddad's kind of friends who were all about his age, And that was really the first, 10 years of experiences I had here with these kind of family trips.
When did you first make it to Prague then?
That was actually Euro-railing. I'm very disgraced to say when I was at high school, Euro-railing through Europe. I came to Prague as a backpacker and did what backpackers do in Prague, as you can imagine.
And you didn't make any use of the Batia name at that time?
No, not at all. On the contrary, actually. It was quite the contrary. So I visited, a few times as a tourist, and then I think the second time I went was my granddad's 90th birthday, which was actually in the Prague Castle. So it wasn't a bad second trip to Prague.
Is that some kind of a special ceremony for him or
they
something?
They did a ceremony to honor him for his 90th birthday, and they did a beautiful event at the Prague Castle in the, I believe you call it the Spanish Hall, right? Which was great. And so I got to see all the back rooms and everything of the castle and spent a few days here then. And then I came back again to Prague the next time to work in the flagship store. So when I joined the family company, my first assignment was go to Prague and put the shop in shape. And so I spent a year there, doing that, just that.
It must have been incredible going to Wenceslas Square, going to a building with your name on it to go to work.
It definitely is. I mean, definitely it's both gratifying and terrifying at the same time, as you can imagine, right? Obviously, the good side is that you have amazing passion. One thing you realize in a business like this is people like to work in a business, a family business. Our business is a bit like a family. People feel like a strong attachment and know each other. And I think that is an amazing thing. On the other side, there's a huge amount of pressure and there's an expectation that, you always have the answer to everything, which is not always the case. We're all just human.
Your name's on the building. You must know everything.
You must know everything. This isn't working. What do we do? And the best you can do, good ideas come from everywhere. Humility, when it comes to these kind of things, is the biggest tool. It's a concept that, is not always practiced in Czech Republic, and it was a little bit novel for them at first, but, they grew to like it.
Your great-grandfather is a really legendary figure in the Czech Republic. What did you hear about him from your family growing up?
I heard a lot of stories about him, especially from my grandfather. I heard, obviously all the epic stories about, his success and, him sending men around the world to look for opportunities. And you probably heard the one where, one comes back, sends a telegraph saying, nobody here is wearing any shoes, no opportunities. The other one says, nobody's wearing shoes, opportunities unlimited, right? So these kind of ones. And then I heard a lot of the real stories because I think, sometimes these things are all romanticized and not everything was easy. That's the first thing is they were really, the thing you really learn is the persistence is incredible that they went through, the challenges they faced every day, and these were young guys. We tend to think of, Tomáš Batia as an old man, but these guys that he was training were 19, 18, going and setting up businesses, running factories, like the Silicon Valley of today. So I think it was really these nitty-gritty stories that really I think we had the privilege to learn about.
Growing up, when did you first take an interest in the shoe business?
I was always involved in the shoe business somehow. My family holidays were going to shoe factories as a kid, right? So I was always around it. I would say I was always interested more on the business side when I was young than on the shoe side. I liked the fundamentals of business. I liked the fundamentals of, the concept of business being team effort and things like that, which somehow, especially when you're young and you're doing lots of sports and things like that. And I went to school in the UK, a boarding school. And so it resonated very well with me. And the shoe passion was a developed one. I can't say I was born a lover of shoes. It wasn't the thing that, made me wake up in the morning. But as I got to learn more about it and started to appreciate it, I started to like it. So probably I was, teenager, late teens, when I started to really appreciate the art and what it was, to make shoes.
How inevitable was it that you would enter the family business?
I don't think, definitely wasn't inevitable. Our family puts no pressure on family members to join the family business. None at all. It's completely up to you, and you have to be hired by the company. And of course, you have some advantages that, you know, it's not too often they don't hire you, but at least they can give you a pretty small position if they wanted to, right? You know, and I got convinced because there was a CEO at the time. My dad had been CEO a while ago, and he had retired. He left the company. And the CEO who took it over was a lifelong Bata guy. So he'd started off as a slipper buyer in Italy at 16, you know, in an apprenticeship. And, you know, he worked his way up, traveled to the world. And after there was basically no family members in the company. And he called me one day, and I was working in the shoe industry, but in a different company after university. And he called me and said, you know this business, come back. You know, it needs some family involvement. And at first I was a little hesitant. I said, oh, do I really want to do it? You know, there's tremendous family pressures of being in a family business, right? And in the end, I decided to, and I think I haven't looked back since.
Today, where are Bautier shoes made?
All over the place. That's the short answer. I mean, we have production facilities in 23 countries. We also have sourcing partners in many other countries. We manufacture, of what we sell, about 55 to 60% in our own fully owned factories, and then the other 40% in partner factories.
And are they still made here in the Czech Republic?
We have a factory in Czech Republic, yeah. We do. We have a factory in the Zlín region making specifically leather outdoor shoes. But we look at our network as like a global supply chain. So just because the shoe's made in Czech Republic doesn't mean it will just be sold here. They can be sold anywhere, and vice versa. So if you go to a Bata store in Prague, for example, you'll find Czech-made shoes, you'll find Indian-made shoes. But we try to make sure that, you know, there's like a standard is not distinguishable depending where it's made.
What countries is Bautier aimed at? I mean, in what markets is Bautier relatively big?
Our brand is very successful in Asia. India is a huge market for us. Funnily enough, Italy is a huge market for us, which is kind of funny. There's a Czech expression to take wood to the forest, and it's kind of funny that, you know, we teach the Italians how to make shoes, but it is how it is. South America is another big region for us. There's about 25 countries which are, I'd say, we're, you know, the number one brand in the country. And then, you know, we're present in 70 other countries where we're amongst the top brands.
I know you spent some time in South America. Did you ever visit the Bautier towns that were set up? I know by a member of a different branch of your family.
So there's a couple of towns. There's I live in Chile, actually, and there's two Bata towns in Chile. One is called Peñaflor, and the other one is called Melipilla. So those ones I knew very well, obviously, working there. And then in Brazil, there was three towns. They're not active anymore, so they're fairly quiet towns these days. But I have out of curiosity gone and visited them. So no, they're pretty amazing, I have to say. And I've seen probably the majority of the Bata towns throughout the world. But what is amazing, I would say, at all of them is, even if the factory's working or not anymore, is still the spirit of the people is still there, you know. And even if I take Peñaflor in Chile, you go to Peñaflor and it's really like going to another country, you know. You go there and you feel like, you know, you're in this kind of European town, and not just from the architecture point of view, but also from the cultural point of view. The people are slightly different than you would find elsewhere. And I think it's good. I think, you know, because there's this community responsibility. And I think, you know, even in Brazil, I saw that, you know, Brazil is typically not a very clean place. But you went to these Bata towns, and maybe you know, they weren't the most affluent places, but everything was organized and clean, and you could see there was respect. And I think Zlín is the same. You see respect, you know. Maybe not everything has always gone their way, but there's respect for their town, for their community, and I think it's a great legacy.
Your family history is so much tied to the history of the Czech Republic. How does that make you feel to have this deep family connection with the country?
We're very proud of it, of course. I think, you know, it's an amazing just privilege for the family and for the company. And I think just the message of the company and the history of the founding, the optimism. I think just the story of Tomáš Bátya coming from the middle of nowhere and having a vision, having an inclusive vision. Outward-looking vision, you know, and I think that's really important word. Outward-looking is amazing, and I think it's a great legacy for the country, and I hope it can be, you know, expanded on. In a time where everybody's looking inwards, it's the right time to look outwards. So I hope that lesson can be learned.
I was speaking there to Tomáš Archer Bata. And you'll find that interview and hundreds of other editions of One on One on our website, that's radio.cz. But that's all we have time for right now on Radio Prague. You can, of course, contact us by email at english@radio.cz.
and you will find us on Twitter and on Facebook. But for now, from me, Ian Willoughby, thanks for listening, folks, and do join us again soon. Thank you.